Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity Radio on a Tuesday. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. No Chris Schmidt, still out for assignment. He'll be back Thursday, and I will be back hosting tomorrow. And then I'm gone. Elijah's gone. Just shut the whole place down, I guess. We're all just going to leave and have a good time. Before we get too much into it, Hail Varsity Radio, Elijah, where are you going? You're going on vacation too, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to Chicago.
Okay.
Lollapalooza, baby.
All right. Okay. All right, Kawhi. We will...
What did it do?
Anything else? You going with, like, friends, family?
What, yeah, so I'm going with a roommate, and then we all got a hotel.
Is that the roommate that broke your shower?
It is, actually.
There you go. Yeah.
How about that? Also, the one that... He's the plumber.
Friendships never die.
He's the plumber who... claimed he can like fix all the stuff in the house, and he can't fix anything in the house. I love him to death, but
that's why the apprentice comes after the
plumber's apprentice. that's actually correct. Yeah.
Well, good, man. That'll be good. Mine's kind of vacation. I'm going to Phoenix. I'm gonna help my buddy drive his car back down there 20 hours, and then we're gonna go look at some apartments and stuff and figure out the hell I'm gonna do.
Probably die in the heat too.
You know, okay, yeah, I will. I mean, it's one of those that, like, with Nebraska, we know it's crazy, but at the same time, you can see, like, oh, well, it'll be some rain, or you know, it might be in the low 80s, high 70s, like, still even in the summer. You pull up, like, the Phoenix weather, and it's like 108, 108, 108, 109. It's like, well, at least we're consistent. The low of 85.
Well, just, like, speaking of the weather, it's beautiful out today.
Yeah,
but, like,
good day out.
The thing is, I always see the weather in, like, Tucson, and I go, 109, it's a dry heat. It's different down there. Yeah. They don't get it.
It is different. Because 100 here with, like, 90% humidity.
But Lord knows I don't want to live in 108-degree temperature still. I'll take 90 humid more than 108 that's dry, I think.
Anyways, Hail Varsity Radio, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. Find us, follow us on Twitter, at TwoBirds1Stone, at Herbal Essences, as well as at Hail Varsity. Please send us questions, any questions you have. You can call 402-466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Any questions?
Yeah, we'd love to talk to you.
This segment, and then we'll have a couple other open segments, but hit us up on Twitter, any questions you got. Anything that, like, this is the perfect time to get, like, make an alternate uniform. I mean, fan made, have Nebraska release one. I don't know. Like, that's what we need right now. That's what we need to spend 15 minutes on, is what's Nebraska alternate going to be and why we're upset about it.
Well, I'm concerned it hasn't been released yet, and it makes me think maybe we're not getting one this year.
Oh, there'll be one.
You sure?
Yeah.
You have inside sources or what?
No. I just, like, it would be weird if they didn't have one, I feel like, because it's been so long since they haven't.
I agree, but the past 4 or 5 years we've done it, they've been out by the end of July.
That's true. Hey, the end of July is tomorrow.
Maybe
I'll have something to talk about tomorrow.
It'd be cool if they released it the morning of Fan Day and everyone got to come out and see it on Fan Day. That'd be kind of cool.
But hey, I'm not, that might be, you know, we're not the marketing
team, not counting on it, but that'd be cool. If anyone's listening that has any effect on this, like...
If there is one, release it Thursday, 8 a.m. Give us something to talk about. Well, neither of us will be here, but...
Give Chris something to talk about.
Yeah, there you go. He comes back and he gets to talk about an alternate uniform for 15 minutes.
It's not like Chris really struggles to find things to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. I think that might just be us. Maybe.
I don't think it's us. We talk about the heat. We're talking about alternate uniforms right now.
I'm sure we're already 4 minutes in, and I don't know where we're going to go from here. So, yes... Twitter, 2Birds1Stone, Herbal Essences, Hail Varsity, and call. And we will have a couple other open segments throughout the show, so we will take any questions, thoughts, concerns, anything.
I'll even say, third person to follow me during the show today will get a free follow back from the Elijah Herbel at Herbal Essences. It's not spelled like the shampoo, H-E-R-B-E-L. Find me.
You can tweet him about your hair, though.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to ignore you about that.
Okay, so something we didn't get to yesterday, I was thumbing through just if you pull up this great site called Google, you can just search Nebraska football and just like stories will come up. It's crazy.
Well, for a second there, I thought I had a new follower. I got a notification from Twitter. Turns out it was just my dad liking my tweet.
Well, there you go.
Thanks, Dad, if you're listening. Probably aren't, but if you are, thank you.
So Athlon Sports yesterday, that was yesterday morning, so we didn't quite get to it, but it kind of goes off of what we're talking about and kind of the hype and the optimism that I would say it's not just the fans. I think it's national media. I think it's local media. I think it's kind of just everyone saw what UCF did in year two. Everyone knows who Frost is and can make their assumptions about Nebraska. It's just like we said yesterday, I think we're just a little too far ahead of the curve here because no football game has been played and you're a 4-8 team 2 years in a row. But you obviously feel better than a 4-8 team. But Athlon Sports, great read here about why or why not Nebraska would make the playoff. And I know that's obviously like, hey, if we're going to go extreme, like let's just go, you know, let's throw a 100-yard pass and just hope it lands in someone's hands, right? But, I mean, it's a fair question because like we were saying yesterday, if Nebraska wins that fifth game, they're 5-0, I mean, there's a target on your back, but you're probably feeling pretty good about yourself, right? So I think it's interesting to ponder and let ourselves go to the point where, you know, if every chip falls in the right place and everything just comes together at the right time, that I guess it could happen, right? Elijah, if you had to take a guess on what the number one reason of why Nebraska would make the college football playoff is, what do you think it is?
It's either I think my best bet, I haven't read this article yet, it's probably the success of Adrian Martinez, or it's just Scott Frost.
It's just Adrian. Yeah, it's just Adrian Martinez.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that's obviously fair. I think we say that all the time, is if Nebraska's going to succeed, it's going to be because of the health and the success of their quarterback.
Nebraska will go as far as Adrian Martinez and the defense can take them.
Yep. Well, guess what number two is?
It's the defense?
A rock-solid defensive front and secondary.
I am so good.
Which is
at
basically
this.
The entire defense, right? I mean, you want to say defensive front. Like, okay, well, there's 4 to 7 of your guys, your second. So, yeah, their entire defense. If they have a great defense, that will obviously change the landscape of how they play. Number three being the fans, essentially the sea of red washing over the opposition, and I that's true. I mean, you look at who comes to town. You get Ohio State at home, you get Wisconsin at home, you get Northwestern at home, and you get Iowa at home, and then who's the other one? I guess you get Indiana at home, and then your other two are
Northern Illinois and South Alabama.
Yeah. So, and you aren't really worried about traveling to Champaign. Maybe briefly. Like, you're kind of like, maybe we should. It's fine. And then Purdue's still kind of a toss-up. I'm not going to say that it's going to be a tough game. I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy game. It's just one of those that, depending on where the two teams are at that point in the season, who knows what could happen. Minnesota, I think, is definitely, as much as we want to make fun of Minnesota being projected as a 10-win team or the Big Ten West champion, I do think that that's probably, of your road games, past Colorado, the one you are worried the most about. If you're the team, if you're a fan, I think you look at that. Maryland would be, be because people don't want to be playing in Maryland.
That'd be a weird looking past that game.
It's like, let's just get to Iowa. Let's forget about this one. Yeah, pretty much.
It's a stumbling block more than a tough game.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how Indiana is too. Of course, that one's at home. But I don't think it's so much that people are worried about Indiana being like a tough opponent. I think people are more worried about Nebraska being so pumped up from where they are the weeks before, or so low from the weeks before, that they'll walk in and be like, it is just Indiana. And then I feel like that's what could happen with the Northwestern game too. But there's a little more motivation to beat Northwestern.
We don't want them to walk into that class like a Monday morning math class. It's 8 a.m. on a Monday. You've had a long weekend. You don't want to be there. You're just kind of showing up just to get your attendance points. You don't want to be there.
One too many drinks on a Sunday. Yeah.
Maybe three too many drinks on a Sunday.
Brunch was crazy, man. It didn't end until 9 p.m.
I will say, back to the Nebraska season, Nebraska fans and media tend to do this every single year, but we're just setting ourselves up for disappointment year after year after year. Yeah. Where you think in the spring, you think, man, we might actually be like reasonable this year with our preseason expectations. Like, I saw the spring game, we're not going to be great. And then August rolls around and fall camp starts up and everyone's thinking,
what if we win 12 games, though?
Yeah.
Wouldn't and that be crazy?
It's reaching a point where even the national media is picking up on it and they're thinking, if we go 11-1, Nebraska fans are going to be like, oh, that's what everyone expected before the season. We were right. Yeah. It's not going to be a satisfactory thing. It's just going to be like, oh, that's what was expected of us. And if we end up going 8-4, people are going to be like, oh, man, I really thought we'd get 11-1. This season's a disappointment.
Well, it's a really weird spectrum because, and I wish we could have gotten into it a little more yesterday, but yeah, it's a really weird because if Nebraska, for example, were to win 10 or more games this year, people look at it like, yeah, I could see this happening. This isn't out of the realm of possibility. But then it's like, say you go into year three and somebody gets hurt or whatever it may be. And, you know, then it's like, well, why didn't we win 10 games this year? You know, I don't want it. I'm not saying that should be an unreasonable expectation because, of course, if you're Frost or any of the coaching staff, that's what you want as well. Of course, you aren't just going to go, ah, we're fine with 8 wins. It's cool. But I also think people, and I wonder how long this patience hold, because everyone wants to keep saying they're patient for Frost, whether it's national, local, fans, whatever it may be. Like, well, it's Frost. Like, we can wait. But, yeah, there's that two ends of the spectrum. Like, what if they only won 6 games this year, right? Which isn't out of the realm of possibility. You could find 6. They'd be close games probably, but you could find a 6-6 season out of here. And people would be like, you know, it's a little bit of a disappointment, but, you know, they're getting the ship righted. Well, how many years, you know, are people patient to that? But also, if you win 10 games, it's like, well, if we don't win 10 games every year, then what are we doing? So I don't know. That's why I try to 8-4. It's like right in the middle. Let's just cut it. Like I can say 8-4 and not feel bad about it.
I'll say it's a great year to be a bar owner in Lincoln, Nebraska for this upcoming season. Because if there's disappointment,
highs or lows.
If there's disappointment this season, if it's 6-6, those bars are going to be packed. But if it's 11-1, 10-2,
the bars will also be packed.
It's the first year we've been getting a long time. Bars are packed. If you're looking to buy business in Lincoln right now, buy a bar.
Yeah.
Just and then like, sell it in 6 months.
There you go. Yeah. Just sign a short-term lease. Three reasons why Nebraska wouldn't make the playoff here now. We've got about 4 minutes. And basically kind of what we were just touching on. One, not enough talent yet. You know, you look at some of the other teams. Obviously, a lot of the talent's in the East, a lot of the development's in the West. We can – not that the East doesn't develop, but the East very much feels like the five-star, let's get all the power we can get, and the West is kind of – you know, we may not have the best players on paper, but development-wise, they're the toughest, right? So basically kind of saying that, like, Nebraska has the talent to win, but maybe not enough to win it all, right? Or win every game.
Which is what 90% of college football teams, especially Power 5, are at.
Yeah. They can win 8 games, but past that, like, you're in a different threshold. Mm-hmm. And which is weird to think, but, I mean, you look back at how many teams win 8 or 9 games. It's really cutting teeth at that point. Two, culture and depth still need to grow. I think their depth is probably a big deal, just because, like we've said before, they've got enough guys. And this kind of goes hand in hand with number one. They've got enough guys, and they've got bodies. It's a matter of what do they have in that depth? Do they have enough guys to go off of, right? And then, of course, number three, the Ohio State rematch. Like we said, that's the turning point of the season, positive or negative. Like that will set the entire season up. I guess a loss before that game could also set the season up, but even then, like,
a loss,
that's the one.
A loss to Colorado is much easier to bounce back from than a loss to Ohio State just because the game's after.
Yeah, well, think about this. I saw a little story about it yesterday. 2024-25, I believe it was, or 23-24, whatever. Wisconsin's playing Alabama in a home-and-home, right? And I saw a Twitter poll that was like, if it's your team, would you want to play Alabama? I said, well, yeah, and for two reasons. One, if you win, it looks incredible, whether it's at home or on the road. If you lose, you lost to Alabama, and you're probably losing the first 1 to 3 games, like week 1 to week 3. And everyone has always said, if you're going to lose, lose in week 1 to week 3, because you can then build your resume from there. And it's non-conference, so of course then it doesn't hurt your conference record either. So like, if like what you just said, if you lose to Colorado, which I still don't think people believe could happen, but if you do, it's a lot better than going 2 weeks later and losing a conference game to Ohio State.
I have a question for the Twitterverse out there. Find us, follow us at @2birds1stone, at @herbalessences, or tweet at ESPN Lincoln, and we'll try to get on top of this. What non-conference opponent would you guys most like to see Nebraska schedule for a future home-and-home series? We do have some good ones coming up. Nebraska, that is. We've got Oklahoma coming up in 2020 and 2021, I believe. Mm-hmm. Or is it 2021, 2022? I believe it's 2021, 2022, along with a 2030 and a 2031 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do have good series coming up. We were finishing up this one with Colorado. Nebraska fans out there, what home and home series would you like to see Nebraska schedule in the next 10 years? Tweet at us at @2birds1stone, at @herbalessences, at ESPN Lincoln.
What would you say? What would you pick? Because I could go... I could go Texas.
Texas is huge. I like the old Big 8 matchups.
Yeah, I feel like you kind of just you run your gamut of Big 8 teams or Big 12 teams
Kansas, and then
go from there. Yeah, I definitely agree. Final thing from Athlon, they have Nebraska finishing 17th, 9-4, and 6-3 in Big 10 play. Coming up, the Athletics' Mitch Sherman next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back. We're rolling on a Tuesday here at Hail Varsity Radio. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal at @2birds1stone, at @herbalessences as well. And always follow at Hail Varsity. Joining us from The Athletic, find him on Twitter at Mitch Sherman. Mitch Sherman. Joining us, the Nebraska writer with The Athletic. Mitch, how are you today?
Hey, Colton, Elijah, I'm good. How are you guys?
We're all right. We are just moving. We found a way to fill 16 minutes with Nebraska football while we anxiously wait. Do you think we're going to hear of an alternate jersey soon? Because I feel like that's something we need to waste 15 minutes on, right?
They always have one, right?
That's what I think, right?
I think so. I'm by no means the authority on alternate jerseys. I kind of like look at them when they come out on social media, and I marvel a little bit at the uproar that is created, and then I move on, and then I remember on the Saturday that they're wearing the alternate jerseys, or at least I have in the past. And in the past, I probably wouldn't have always been at the Nebraska game when that date arrived. This year, I will be, no matter when it is. And if there is an alternate jersey, I just hope that I can read the numbers on the back. It's my only concern.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely I think that's a top priority when making an alternate jersey is make it legible and don't make it look like you're wearing pajamas or duct tape, I guess. Those are my top three.
Some people just get really into them, and they want to critique them, and they want to rate them on every scale. And, I think if they're great, then fine. And if they're not great, then that's fine, too, because they're only going to wear them one game.
Yeah, there you go. That's fair. Mitch Sherman with us from The Athletic. Mitch, you had a sit-down with Dave Remington and kind of just an overall chat with him, talking about the Esiason Foundation as well as his brief time at Nebraska in the AD role. Just kind of walk me through what that conversation with him was like and maybe something you learned from him that you didn't expect going into it.
Well, I mean, it's always enlightening to talk to Dave Remington. I mean, he's lived like an incredible life in less than 60 years from his upbringing in South Omaha. We talked a lot about that, about his parents, and that came up because I talked to Dave about his international travels. You know, he had children late in life. His triplets are 13. He's 59. You can do the math. Daughter. But a lot of time while he was working for Boomer Esiason in the down times of the years to travel. And he would do this on his own. You know, his wife has had her career. She's an international fashion model. when Dave was playing in the NFL for 7 years. They lived in Hong Kong for a short time after his career because of her career, her work. He was getting his MBA at Wisconsin and then went to work for Boomer in the mid 90s. Boomer Esiason, of course, was his quarterback with the Bengals. Boomer was still in the NFL at the time. His son Gunner was born and then later diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. So we went through all of that. We went through Dave's time, his 3 weeks as the interim AD in Nebraska back in 2017, bridging that gap between the end of Sean Eichhorst's time and the beginnings of Bill Moose. And, you know, Dave was in town when Bill Moose got to got on the ground, and you know, immediately the search for a new football coach began. Even as Mike Riley finished up that year, and we know the story, you know the history. Bill Moose was hired for to do one thing at the beginning, and that was to make an important change in that football program. So it was interesting to hear Dave's perspective on all of those things. You know, what did I learn that was new? I had not heard him. Well, I heard Dave when he was in Lincoln a couple of years ago mention the importance of retiring in the state of Nebraska, coming back to his roots. His three siblings live in Omaha. Dave wants to retire in 2 years when he's 61, move back to Omaha. His kids will be beginning high school around that time, perhaps going into 10th grade, and his oldest three. And live out his years where he was born. I found that you know he went more into depth on that subject. You know why he wanted to be back in Nebraska as opposed to New York City, where he spent the past 25 years. And it was interesting to hear that.
Mitch Sherman with us, Mitch from The Athletic. Breaking down now, we'll talk a little bit about this season going into the football, but something. People, I think, are always excited about, especially now that it's Frost Verduzco and you look at Martinez, is the quarterbacks and kind of what the expectations from that group are, especially as they essentially are picking, you know, their one quarterback each recruiting class as they go. But right now, their current backup being Luke McCaffrey. What are your expectations with Luke going into this year? We know he played a little bit of wide receiver out in Colorado and in high school before, you know, because his brothers were also playing quarterback. So it was kind of an interesting dynamic there with the family. But what are your expectations with him? And do you think for sure that those four games at least will get used for his redshirt year?
I mean, if he's healthy, I think he's going to play in four games. I don't think it's going to be a traditional backup quarterback role. And I think Nebraska will use Noah Vedral as the number two quarterback behind Adrian. And then Luke will come in situationally. You know, I see potentially a package being developed for him. If in fact, he picks up where he left off in the spring. You know, we'll find out more this week, this weekend, as the team gets started with preseason camp. You know, next week there'll be some media availability after the practices have begun. You know, that's one of the questions, I think, for the offensive coaches right off the bat, for Mario Verduzco, for Scott Frost, for Troy Walters. You know, how do you see McCaffrey now fitting into this? You know, I think he can be more than just a token guy who plays in mop-up duty in four games as a quarterback and preserves his redshirt. I think they can find a way to use him in more than four games and, you know, be a part of this offense. And yeah, burn the redshirt. Go ahead. If he's going to be able to help this team, you know, in different ways, playing receiver, you know, playing in the slot, you know, doing some things, even perhaps in the backfield where he lines up with Mark. Look at a defense and what they see on tape from Nebraska last year. Obviously, Nebraska was in at the quarterback spot a year ago, and that's just not the case right now with Bedrill being eligible from day one and with McCaffrey there and with Andrew Bunch a year older. I think they have a luxury to be able to do a lot of different things with Luke McCaffrey, and you know, we'll see how creative they get. That's going to depend on, as I said, how far he progressed after the spring. He was on a good track. We saw it in the spring game. With his speed, if he can bring something to your offense outside of the quarterback spot, then I think you use him in that way, and you get everything you can out of the guys who are on your roster.
A few more minutes here, Mitch. Kind of branching off of that, What going into fall camp, I guess, is your expectation, or maybe what you're keeping an eye on to learn more about? Because there are still, there are some certainties that we know, there are still a lot of question marks and questions that need to be answered. What What is the one thing going into fall camp that you're hoping to get answered?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things. Number one, I'll give you two things on the offensive side. We talked about McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. That'll be an interesting thing to watch as camp goes along. I'm curious about the running backs. Nebraska did not have its full stable of backs in March and April, the last time we saw this team on the practice field. The last time we saw this team in uniform at the spring game on April 13th, they were in a completely different place than where this team is at right now at the running back spot. Dedrick Mills has been on campus since late May. Ramir Johnson has been here for most of the summer. How do those two guys fit in? Where have the players who progressed in the spring, where do they now fit into this mix? I'm talking about guys like Brody Belt, like Wyatt Mazur, who made an impact as a reserve a year ago. I'm interested to see how that mix comes together. Is Wandale Robinson going to be used in some situations as a running back in addition to playing receiver? The running back spot to me is a key for this offense to be diverse and to give them the best shot to keep Adrian Martinez healthy throughout the year. And then in the middle of the offensive line, what's Cam Jurgens' availability from day one? Is he healthy? Is he hurt? If he's hurt, how long is he going to be out? Is he going to be available to you at some time during August? Is it going to be September, October? If it's going to be later into the season, then I think Nebraska's going to make a push to find somebody else at that center spot right off the bat. Is it Trent Hickson? If that's the case, what are you going to do at left guard? So there's a lot of questions right there in the interior of the offensive line, especially those two positions, center and left guard. And they're critical to the success of this offense to be able to have a solidified offensive line. You need to have five guys that you can depend on. I think Greg Austin is optimistic about the possibility that he's going to have 10 guys, 9, 10 guys, and really be able to play those reserves in important moments of games this year. It was a luxury that he didn't have last year, and you often saw it take a toll on the offense as games progressed, and that's not where they want to be and not where they expect to be in this year in year two of this regime.
Mitch Sherman with us, Mitch with The Athletic. Mitch, about 90 seconds. Early thoughts on Bubba Starling and his performance so far in the majors, not only at the plate where he had what seemed now kind of ups and downs, but, I mean, I believe it was an 11-game hitting streak in his first 12 games, with the first one just being the debut where he didn't get a hit. And then he's played really well in the field, too. Just what are your early thoughts on Bubba's performance?
I saw his throw the other night from center field to gun down a runner at the plate, and he threw it 100 miles an hour after making a running catch, and that just gives you a hint of his athleticism. To be able to come in and do that, make that kind of a play, and show that kind of an arm 2 weeks into his big league career, that's what Kansas City saw when they picked him as high as they did in 2011. That's what Nebraska and Bo Pelini and those offensive coaches saw when they went out and recruited a raw guy to try to get him to be a quarterback in Lincoln. And it's great that he's getting a chance to be able to show that athleticism. It's too early to say if this is going to last, if it's going to be something that carries into 2020. But I'm happy for him because of how long he's waited to get to this point, that when he did arrive, that it's working out well from the beginning. We're not even into August yet, so give it a little more time to breathe. And if he's still hitting 300 at the end of September, then I think there's a good chance he has a future with Kansas City.
Find Mitch on Twitter, at Mitch Sherman, and read him on The Athletic. Mitch, it was great having you come on, and hopefully we'll hear about alternates soon, and we'll get to waste some time with that again. Thanks for hopping on.
All right, quiz me on that next time you talk to me. I'll offer no insight.
All right, will do. Thanks, Mitch.
All right. Thanks.
All right, big thanks to Mitch Sherman. Follow and read him on The Athletic. We will talk a little more Husker football as Hill Varsity rolls on a Tuesday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Mitch Sherman for joining us and helping debate whether we think alternate uniforms will be released soon. I, I think it's got to be at some point, but I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, I suppose. Big thanks to Mitch. Go follow him on Twitter, Emmett Sherman. Read him on The Athletic. Wonderful stuff from him. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences, excuse me, and Hail Varsity. Tweet us. We'll get to your questions if you have any, concerns if you have any, and we will go from there. Something we didn't get to in that first segment, Greg Smith wrote about this, the position U, kind of how, you know, so-and-so is DBU, so-and-so is, you know, fill in the blank position, and kind of where Nebraska could go with that. And we touched on it a little bit with Mitch, and how if you were to pick Nebraska right now, and the reason they aren't on the list that Greg is referring to is because it's post 98, and it's easy to see that Nebraska hasn't been elite at one position specifically over the similar time span. But I think we kind of touched on it with Mitch, and that the way it's trending, it looks like Nebraska's kind of trending towards a title of being quarterback U.
We had a D-line U in progress before Pelini got fired, I would argue.
Yeah.
We had some great players. We had Randy Gregory. We had Ndamukong Suh. I'm just reading through guys in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. We had, please for the Cowboys now. How am I forgetting his name? It's Malik Collins.
Malik Collins yep.
was on that one of those defensive lines. A really good class of defensive linemen, all top of the NFL draft type guys. But as soon as Bo Pelini was gone, that well kind of dried up.
Yeah, even guys like Crick and
Steinkuhler.
Steinkuhler Valentine.
Vincent Valentine. Yeah, yeah, Vincent, he's Valentine. Playing for the Patriots now.
So yeah, I guess that of recent, like there was kind of a, it wasn't like a constant thing. I guess it's probably where it was more of, hey, this year we have a great defensive lineman, and then a year or two later, hey, we have another great defensive lineman, but they all were kind of bunched up in that same, you know, 7-year time span.
Yeah, and after the success of the 90s, if we could have revitalized that, the defensive line, gotten some guys in the NFL, we could have been known for our D-line, but that fell off.
But, yeah, I feel like, you know, obviously, as Greg points out here, it's easy to see if you're looking since 98, which schools would be quarterback U. You've, of course, got USC, Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez, Sam Darnold. Right. And then you look at Oklahoma, four Heisman winners in 15 years, Jason White, Sam Bradford, Baker Mayfield, and Kyler Murray. Now, you can debate all day that Jason White probably shouldn't have won the Heisman, but it's neither here nor there. So looking at, you know, you've got Frost, former quarterback, you've got, and great success with quarterbacks already. You have Verduzco, who's a wizard, I would say. I don't know if there's another word that really...
A mad genius? Something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Mad scientist?
Mad scientist.
Something along those lines. Just is way too smart to be coaching the game of football and somehow makes that work,
After reading up on just his coaching methods, and he had a great interview with Sipple, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He had another really good interview with Mitch Sherman in The Athletic. Which, if you don't have The Athletic, you're missing out. Let me tell you what. That's not even a paid sponsorship. I just love my subscription to The Athletic. But the amount of work he puts in and the theory he has behind everything he teaches is astounding. I think he's one of the smartest quarterbacks coaches in the nation among college, NFL, high school, what have you.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree. And then, of course, you look at what they're setting up with. You've got Martinez. You've got McCaffrey. You even got Vedrill on the roster. You've got Smothers coming in, and then they're you know, recruiting for their 21 and 22 classes, where they're trying to get similar body types, where they want that dual threat, kind of do it all kind of quarterback. So I feel like that's where that upswing is. But the more I think about it now, you know, you think about their D line too, current D line. If that thing clicks, I mean, there's a lot of names on that line too. So I'm just trying to think like what else Nebraska could be known for position-wise.
Again, under Pelini, we had some good cornerbacks, I guess.
Secondary was pretty good.
Secondary was pretty good, which we've struggled with in recent years. but that was never really a what's the word I'm looking for? Never really a predominant part of the game back in the 90s. Cornerbacks coming out was never really that. But Nebraska's had some good cornerbacks through the years. When you look at guys like Prince Mukamara, we had Stanley Jean-Baptiste, who was great in college. NFL career has been up and down. Alfonso Dinard was awesome in college.
Gomes was good
as coming from safety. They even made a position for John Gomes.
Yeah.
What did they call it?
Well, the defense was called the Peso.
The Peso, that's right.
Yeah, so the Peso defense, yeah, which was basically let Ndamukong Suh wreak havoc and then just make sure that if something gets past him, clean it up. I feel like, the upswing right now would be quarterbacks, but I could see a lot of other positions filling that role. Something we didn't get to talk to Mitch about was the coordinators. And a question he got about coordinators being on the move. I find that interesting because obviously this is like, hey, how far off the rails can we take this thing? And you know, what if Nebraska just wins it all? And what happens then? What do we do then?
It's kind of like who would replace Shenander or Walters, assuming that one of them
Bob
were to
Diaco,
move up?
Probably.
I'd love to have Bob Diaco back. The guy was just great for sound bites. You talk about him all day.
And just hold the mic the whole time. I find that interesting, though, that, like, people, you know, of course, coordinators are always looking for, like, that next job. But, you know, I don't think Frost would have brought everyone with him or everyone would have come with him if they didn't believe in some kind of at least, like, a process. Because I don't think it's like, hey, if we're good after 2 years, I'm getting the heck out of here. I don't think that's a scenario because I feel like if Walters was ready to move on and take a head job, he probably would have done it already. He would have done it before going to Nebraska personally.
There's loyalty both ways. Frost showed loyalty to his assistants by bringing them every single one of them to Nebraska, which when was the last time you saw that from a head coach moving up to a big college?
I don't even think it's so much like – I mean, it is Frost. It is a different like dynamic, but it's not even so much – just like bringing everybody up because the coach, like the head coach, wanted to. It's getting everyone to come with and like not looking for other jobs. Like they heard Nebraska and went, all right, when do we leave? So I find that interesting. I don't know what it would take for like the coordinators to leave. I don't know what it would take. I know what it would take for like a wide receivers. Well, I guess your offense coordinator is wide receivers coach, but I could see why a position coach would go and take maybe a higher up job. Maybe a D line coach moves to a defensive coordinator position somewhere else. But right now, I feel like there's probably some silent agreement that like, hey, we're going to try to make this work for X amount of years, and then we'll go from there. But yeah, I mean, if they're good right away, it is a real concern. You never know what assistant coaches are thinking because at the end of the day they aren't making the final call.
We're running into the break here, but I personally think purely speculation, Walters would be first to go.
I agree.
Out of anyone. So we can talk about that when we come back, who maybe would replace Walters in the scenario that he would leave.
Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Working our way through here on a Tuesday, Hail Varsity Radio, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal at Two Birds, One Stone, at Herbal Essences, and always follow at Hail Varsity on Twitter. As Elijah and I were saying about the coordinators, I feel like it would have to be a really good season for us to really start speculating this. But, you know, if that's what people want to believe in, then I guess that's where our mind is going to take us. But as we were teasing a little bit, I think Walters would probably be the first to go, not for any particular reason other than he was kind of sought after when they were on the way out of UCF.
For that reason, and that he is running the offense that Scott Frost has constructed for him, and that people look at Scott Frost's offense, which he had at Oregon, which he had at UFC, which he now runs at Nebraska, and people go, wow, I want that offense. Mm-hmm. And I can't get Scott Frost, but I can go get Scott Frost's offense, according to Troy Walters.
To be my defensive coordinator.
Yeah, but
wouldn't that be a wild turn of events?
If,
he completely flips. He starts coaching.
Walters
DBs
gets hired as a defensive coordinator. Scott Frost promotes Eric Shenander to offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator.
I
think if Walters were to go, who's next in line to get the offensive coordinator spot?
Probably Held. If they're hiring within, I'd give it to Held for the reason of, one, he has a focus on the offense already. And I think you wouldn't be adding too much to the plate of the running backs coach, whereas if you're adding to the plate of a guy like Mario Verduzco, who's like already being so methodical with quarterbacks, it shouldn't be like, okay, now be really methodical with our entire offense. It's like, well,
Verduzco's so specialized with his quarterbacks, I don't think he would make a good coordinator.
Right.
Held, my one holdup with him is that he is so influential in the recruiting on the offensive side of the ball, that if he has to be held back from his recruiting by game planning, film sessions, all that stuff, mm-hmm. is that going to hurt the recruiting?
Yeah, and that's the tough part with hiring within, is because you've got a beautiful system, it's all working, you know your place, and then it's like, okay, so we need you to do one more extra thing. But the added part is that Held's been a head coach before. Yes, at the JUCO level, that still counts, though. And he's been in situations where he's had more responsibility. So I feel like if you're hiring within, that's the choice, personally. But you can't tell me there aren't at least a half a dozen people that would want to be the offensive coordinator for Scott Frost.
Hiring internally for the defense, hypothetically, Eric Shenander leaves after this season. Who are you looking at?
Ooh, that one, I don't know if you'd hire within.
I like Coach Rude.
Yeah.
Young, he's been with Frost for a while. He is a Nebraska guy, played at Nebraska.
Plays in the recruiting thing, though, too.
Yeah.
Because if that's your – that's the thing, is if there's a slight downside with the guys that are assistants without being coordinators, is they're so crucial in recruiting, Rude being kind of your Omaha guy and Held being a – kind of Midwest and just getting after it kind of guy on the recruiting trail.
Held's big in Texas too.
Yeah. That one's a little tougher for me, because I don't know if you'd go Fisher. I don't know if you'd go Rude. I personally would say that I find it easier for them to hire within for the offensive side than it would be to hire within on the defensive side. That's where I'll put that. I'm not sure, though.
We're just playing the hypothetical game, too.
Yeah. You know, when at the end of the season all the coaches are still here and they profess that they aren't going to ever leave as long as Frost is here, you know, then we'll all be wrong. We'll all have egg on our face.
And we'll have wasted 10 minutes.
That's Elijah Herbal. I'm Colton Stone. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome back to Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbal. Find us, follow us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences, and always follow at Hail Varsity for all your Nebraska news and content. Coming up, we're going to have a rewind from Chicago as we talked to, well, all the Nebraska folks that were out there, but a rewind with Scott Frost and Muhammad Berry as we get you kicked off for fall camp. We figured, you know, why hear what we expect for the season from us when we can hear it from the guys that are going to be out on the field.
Yeah, they do a great job diving into the defense this year, what we can expect on the field from the defensive guys up front. Mo Berry kind of talks about what the backers are going to bring, mm-hmm. and considering that was the biggest question mark of last year and then kind of the biggest thing to look forward to for this year, they do a great job diving into some of that stuff.
Right. So without further ado, while we are sans Chris Schmidt, we'll get a little bit of Chris Schmidt here as he talked to Scott Frost and Muhammad Berry at Big Ten Media Days.
We welcome in the head coach of Nebraska, Scott Frost, with us. Scott, good to see you. Thanks for taking and making time. And could you have written a better script today, travel-wise?
Probably. If I'd have really put my mind to it, I could have figured out a way to make it more efficient.
Well, you're here. You're in Chicago, and a lot's been talked about with expectations in your team, but it seems to me like how you played and grew under and grew up with Nebraska football has translated your time under Coach Osborne as the guys continue to move forward in year two. It's taken a hold. I mean, the culture that's always talked about. Spend a little bit of time here on that impact you had on your team with culture and how guys like Adrian, guys like Mo, they're taking your words to heart.
Yeah, it took a while. I mean, it's raising kids to some degree, and I'm not saying these guys are kids. They're not. They're big, strong men. But you know, the first step is to just teach them what you expect out of them. And it took us a long time just to communicate with them all the little things that we expected, what we knew was required of them to have them be successful and be good. Then you got to convince them of it. Then you got to get them to do it. Then you got to get them to do it more consistently. And you know, we had majority buy-in, but there was enough dissenters for a while last year that it was costing us a lot of things, including games. And we're to a point now where you can't count the number of guys that aren't 100% on board on one hand, and that's really unusual with a 155-man team.
You're able to still be in charge, but police. I mean, guys are holding peers accountable.
Yeah. You know, any team can be good if coaches are holding everybody accountable, but, you know, it can be even better if it's happening in the locker room. We got an unusual situation that the coaching staff, by and large, has been together for going on 4 years now. Every coach knows what's expected. They're able to communicate with the players. The players are starting to make sure that the guys around them are doing the right things, and hopefully that leads to wins.
Is this team at a point right now where they're having fun?
Yeah, I think so. They enjoy being together. You know, that's one of the big changes is I would say early on last season, we didn't have that many guys that when they had free time just came up and hung out in the football building. And when players love the game, when they love being around each other, in your free time, that's where you want to be. And more I'm seeing guys hanging out in the building, hanging out together, and being good teammates to one another.
You know, you talk with some folks around college football, and they smile about what Nebraska used to be and where they think it's going to go. And your offense, your system, and then you pair it with Adrian, and what is next for him and your offense, this offense in year two?
Just all I'm worried about is improvement. We talk to players all the time about being a better version of themselves today than they were yesterday. If you're working hard, that's inevitably going to happen. Our guys are doing that. He's pretty close to the ideal quarterback for our system. So we're all excited. But again, I don't care what people are picking or saying or anything else. We got a lot of tough games ahead of us, and we got to go earn it.
Does that wear you out with the expectations? Because you've been asked 500 times today about expectations.
Yeah, it does. You know, honestly, I come to these things and I answer the same questions the same way for the entire day. But dealing with expectations is easy. Just put your head down. Don't pay any attention to it. And we'll make sure the team's thinking that way too.
Run defense, that's a key to winning the Big Ten or any football game. Do you feel better about the defense and where they can be in 19?
I do. You know, I think we've added some talent. Guys have a better understanding of scheme. And being bigger, faster, and stronger is going to be key. You know, I've said this publicly, but there was a few games we just got pushed around last year. I don't think physically we were ready to hold up. Iowa ran 20-some outside zones against us, and were just crushing us on the edge, and we couldn't get the ball back to the offense. And that's because, you know, they were just more physical than us last year. But that was with 1 year of strength and conditioning with Zach, and I know we've made up a lot more ground this year. I was in the weight room the other day and watched 7 or 8 of our defensive linemen squat over 800 pounds twice. And those guys are going to be harder to move this year, and that alone should make us better.
Scott Frost, Nebraska's head coach, with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt and, of course, Elijah Herbel back at our stations in Lincoln and across the Nebraska network. Coach, I'll let you get out of here. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today.
You bet, Chris. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yep.
And we say hi to Mo Berry on Hail Varsity Radio. Mo, how's your day been, man? What's good?
It's been going well. A lot of talking.
You're good at talking, though, man. You like communicating.
Yeah, sometimes. But, I'm just ready to play football, man.
You're just sick of talking?
I'm ready.
Time for action?
I might not talk for an entire week after this. I'm just ready. I'm ready to play football. I'm ready to put in some work.
Mo, I remember interviewing you after your freshman year, and there was kind of a narrative out there, not at you, but about the team. And just, do you guys want to play ball? Do you like it? And you looked me square in the eyes. And you're like, I love this game.
Mm-hmm.
And your passion is shown throughout. You're a leader. You're a vocal leader. You're an emotional leader on this team. How have you been able to bring people along with you this offseason? And it's time, right? I mean, yeah. It's senior year.
Yeah. Well, first, you have players that they do love the game. And everyone's passion is different and passion level. I think first by bringing in a coach like Coach Frost that is a player's coach and really has made players buy in and believe in his plan is big, is huge. A lot of players transformed themselves just because of Coach Frost alone and not even people doing or saying anything to them but him. And then it comes to, okay, what can I do to help them? Not being selfish, making sure not that I'm not only improving myself, I'm improving my teammates. Because the thing is, I do love my teammates, and love is wanting to see someone succeed and be the best version of themselves day in and day out. And that's how I show my love for my teammates, wherever I could tell them. And when they do wrong, I'm gonna tell them they did wrong. And the same thing with my teammates to me. DCAP would tell me if I do something wrong, and I would take it and I would fix it. That level of accountability that has manifest itself this year is what's going to win us games.
You're heartbroken. It looks like about 4-8, and you've had two of them. And how have you processed through that, or have you?
It's just this 4-8 season compared to last 4-8 season, two different seasons, definitely.
Still the number you don't like.
Yeah, this program 4-8 is not acceptable in Nebraska, never will be, and we understand that we did underperform, and in no way are we making any excuse that will that will make 4-8 feel any better. It should hurt as it did last year and still does now. But we have to turn the page and we have to make 4-8 into some way different. We have to make sure they know a version of Nebraska that they're not going to forget for a long time. So that's the biggest thing. It's to make it real. It's to turn this program and play every opponent, give them the respect like they're the best team in college football and play them to dominate them, not only to win.
Mo Berry, a couple more minutes with us. Kind enough to be here on Media Days here down in Chicago, the downtown Hilton. So, Mo, you mentioned that maturity that needs to happen where you respect every opponent. Defensively, what type of jump can the defense make? What are you kind of putting on yourself? What are you putting on the group when it comes to stopping the run and getting after the quarterback? Because that's bread and butter in the Big Ten. That's how you find your way to Indy.
Well, first you have to stop the run. It's pivotal that you do stop the run. So when you talk about how big we have gotten bigger, faster, and stronger. We got a true nose guard now in Darian.
You got
Daniel.
A few of them.
Yeah, two of them, three of them.
You got to be happy about that, right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. We have ends that are over 300 pounds, and we have just abundance of linemen, D linemen, ready to rotate and rotate in. I've gotten bigger. I've went from 222 to 225 to 235, 237. So everyone has gotten bigger. The thing that we have to do is penetrate those sweeps, get in the backfield, and wreak havoc. That's what we got to do. And if we do that, we will stop any run game. Just believing in what you're doing and actually executing it and having the desire to make big-time plays in that run game.
Mo, last thought here, bud. You're the leader vocally. That's been accepted by your teammates because of your performance on the field. You're more comfortable getting guys on board. How did year two of the program, the off-season training, and I asked Adrian this, how did you use it and how's it enhancing what you become as a player?
The program.
With the military training, yes, sir.
Yeah, year two, honestly, I took every little thing, and I think year one was more of a scary thing. Like, oh, snap.
Scared straight?
Yeah, like, oh, we about to do all this stuff. Year two, I was taking every lesson Cappy gave us and those guys over there and really just trying, okay, what does a leader do? Okay, leader, he take care of his teammates and finishes and accomplishes the mission. And that's what I have to do. I have to help. I have to take care of my teammates, whatever they need in me, whatever I have to give to them to make them a better version or of themselves is what I'm willing to do. And I've expressed that, and they understand that in me. So me being selfless, and if I can't go home and take a nap because I'm meeting with so-and-so and watching film, or I'm trying to help so-and-so with this, that's what's needed of me. And I have to give everything I have to accomplish this mission because I can't ask them to do that if I'm not willing to do that for them.
Mulberry, Mo, best to see you, man. Thanks so much for a few minutes. We welcome in.
Sorry about that. A little bit of a loop there. Big thanks for Frost and Mo Berry joining Schmidt while they were out there. I think it's interesting hearing Mo Berry talk about his leadership style and kind of, not that he wasn't a leader last year, but just like kind of assuming that role of leader on the defense. And when you think about it, as a middle linebacker, and obviously I have two inside linebackers when you run a 3-4, but being an inside linebacker, like you're the quarterback of the defense. I mean, that's essentially what your position is. And the two most vocal guys on the team should be your quarterback and one of your linebackers. And I think that's really cool that, like, Mo Berry is emerging as that guy. I don't know what your thoughts are on it, but
I mean, Mitch Sherman's article that he released today on The Athletic with Dave Remington kind of touches on this as being one of the things that Nebraska sorely lacked was anyone on the team who was a true leader. There were guys who were leaders of the team, quote unquote, but there weren't any true leaders who stepped up and made sure the team lived up to certain standards that have been in place at Nebraska for years. And I think Mo Berry's one of those guys that understands Nebraska. He gets the standards that have been set forth in Nebraska, and he gets what he needs to do to get the rest of the team to live up to those standards.
Yeah, there's a certain culture. There's a certain feel that you have to go for. It's not just, oh, we're just playing football for another school. Like, it's, like you said, it's a different standard. And it's cool that, like, a guy that has toughed it out and had a couple of rough seasons in his time here on the defense has taken that role. And then a guy that's going into his sophomore year quickly came in, picked up the culture, picked up the standards, and is already implementing it on the offensive side. So I think it's really great that they have two guys, and then their head coach, of course, preaching it to everybody as well.
There's something distinctly I remember from Mo Berry where it was on his Twitter last year. We had just started out 0-6, and he still tweeted out a picture of him, and it said, I played for Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
That was just what struck me about Mo Berry, that this guy's different.
Something's got to stop that motion, and airbags usually aren't enough. Do you want it to be a seatbelt or the windshield? Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. This applies whether you're in the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket from the Department of Transportation Highway Safety Office. Coming up, room for you. Tweet at us at @2birds1stone, at @herbalessences, and we will get to your questions in the next segment as we are wide open for calls and tweets. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Welcome back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. Find us, follow us on Twitter, shoot us a message, tweet at us, DM us, make fun of us. Doesn't matter. Anything, really. At Two Birds, One Stone, at Herbal Essences.
Think I'm cute, please slide in my DMs.
At Hail Varsity. Something I was thumbing through, again, this wonderful thing called the internet that you can just type anything you want to find out.
How incredible is the internet? Yeah, I think the younger generation takes it for granted.
Yeah, man.
It's beautiful.
I was born in the 90s, so it's just kind of like new to me, you know. I just grew up with it. Yeah, no, it's wonderful, man. I love the internet. Anyways, point being, because we're just, you know, thumbing through, waiting for fall practice to start, waiting for fan day. Hopefully no one brings anything weird to get signed.
It's that time of the year. The time between between Big Ten Media Day and start of fall camp.
Yeah.
You're
just, like, ready for it to be real football.
We're in the doldrums, you know?
Yeah.
Not much wind going. We're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that the horse latitudes? Yeah, they call it the horse latitudes by the equator because they take the horses.
Yummy stumped. That's what I'm going to say.
They took the horses and they'd throw them off the boat because they'd be stuck and they didn't have enough food for them. They'd eat all their food, or they'd eat the horses first and then toss them off. So they call them the horse latitudes. If I'm wrong on that, tweet at me at HerbalEssences.
There you go. You learn something new every day. Two things I want to hit on here really quick. You know, we've already let ourselves go into, you know, what happens if Nebraska goes 15-0, wins college football playoff. Bowl projections, and this is from 24/7 Sports. Nebraska's bowl projection right now is the Citrus Bowl, and they will be facing off with Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies of A&M. So my thought with that is, one, getting an old Big 12 opponent, and two, if you're a Nebraska fan in the middle of winter, you get to travel to Orlando.
What day is that bowl game on?
Looks like that's usually right around the 31st. So it's kind of usually that like 30th to the 2nd like window. So it's not giving me it doesn't have an exact day here for me, but
can we talk about just how absurd it is that there's bowl predictions in August? You don't even know anything. That's just how this time of year kind of is for college football.
Hey,
media.
They've got UCF in the Cotton Bowl.
Really?
Yeah.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah, with Notre Dame. I'm not, like, too shocked, I guess, because if you think about it, if Milton comes back in any capacity, I feel like UCF, I don't know, that's going to be a tough injury to come back from because, I mean, it legs for a quarterback. I don't know if it's which leg of his it would be, but either way, it's
the left leg. Because he was running around the right side of the line. I'm pretty sure he planted on the left, and that's where he took it.
So either way, yeah, I guess that would be his plant leg. So that, who knows? That'll be an interesting setup because them nearly going undefeated 2 years in a row. I mean, Frost left him a pretty good cabinet to use. Right now, the projected top four, final four, a couple of familiar names. Alabama and Clemson playing each other in the 1-4 game, which is the Peach Bowl this year, and then the Fiesta Bowl being Georgia and Michigan in the 2-3 matchup, with it being Georgia-Alabama. And I mean, dude, if it's an all-SEC title game, I'm not going to watch. Wasn't it Georgia and
Georgia-Alabama, I told myself I wasn't going to watch, and it came around.
And it's
kind of like the Super Bowl every single year. Oh, if the Patriots make it again this year, I'm not watching. And then the Super Bowl rolls around, and I go, okay,
yeah,
I'll watch.
I guess I'll watch it.
There's commercials and stuff, too.
It's fine. I'm not mad about it. No, I don't think I watched it at all the last time that the two of them played, when it was Alabama-Georgia for the title. I don't think I watched it at all.
Let me tell you what. You missed out on a great game.
No, I'm
because that was the Tua game. That's everyone's going to remember that game because Tua came back in the
not
second
me.
Half and
left. I won't
back.
Remember it.
You missed out. That's all I got to say.
I think I watched a little bit of it, but I told myself I would not. I will not watch a game if they are from, I'd say probably just SEC. I'd watch a Big Ten versus a Big Ten title. You know, let's get a 10-7, you know.
I think in the current scheme of college football, it's not right to have two teams from the same conference both make the college football playoff when it's only a 4-team playoff.
I agree.
I can see it. If there's an 8-team playoff, I can see a second team from a conference making it. And if they...
Because of a wild card, at large, whatever you want to call it.
If they both make it to the title game, good for them. Awesome.
Yeah. because you've got to win two games to get there.
But in a four-game playoff, there should be one team that makes the college football playoff, and it should be the conference champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm on board. Yeah, the only issue they run into currently is that there's five power conferences and only four spots, and there's one conference that usually is severely lacking in that. I mean, in this, you'd only have the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC represented, which I guess that's happened. What was it? It was Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Georgia. So that was only three of the five. Like, that's the thing, is that you're only allowing four teams of 129 now, 130 maybe. That sounds right, 130 now.
Something like
that. So you're already doing that. And then on top of that, is you break the conferences into five conferences that you care about. And then on top of that, only three of them get represented. So, like, I don't know.
Do you think it's time to expand the college football playoff?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was time to expand it as soon as they released it.
What, to eight?
Yeah.
How do you
at least six.
I really like the idea of six.
Because that gets you the five.
I like giving an automatic bid to the five power conferences, mm-hmm. and then you have one at-large bid still. If there's somebody like a UCF who runs the table and you think, okay, maybe this team can get in, you give it to them. Or if there's a team that, say, lost the SEC championship game, was 12-1, that you came into the SEC championship game 12-0, played a 12-0 team, lost, then they get the at-large bid. I like that idea. And then you can reward your top two seeds by giving them a week off.
And the thing, too, is... the interesting thing with six, and the reason I'm partially for it, and I'm probably more for it than against it, but the reason I would be against it is the fact that what will happen is, because currently, like, say you make that qualifier for, well, a team like UCF or a team like Memphis or whoever, you know, fill in the blank, has to be at number 15 or higher to get the New Year's Six Bowl or whatever the rule is for that. Like, they have a qualifier for it. Well, the thing that's going to happen is they may just look at, like, the rankings and go, well, six is just going to go the next best team that's left out, you know. And so I don't know if that means that six spot would automatically go to the best group of five and then all the championship teams, but then you get the chance of what if Northwestern would have beaten Ohio State last year in the Big Ten title game. So then it creates more confusion at six. So that's why I think eight is almost the right number. But what you can do also is you have eight, and then you play those first week of games, the beginning of December, on campuses, and then you, like, get two or three weeks off, and then you kind of pick up where those New Year's Six games are.
I was going to say, my only problem with an 8-team playoff is just the load it puts on these college players' bodies.
Yeah.
Because they're already going to be playing. You got 12 in the season, plus a conference championship game. If you're going to make the national title game, it's 15 games you're playing. Mm-hmm. If it becomes an 8-team playoff, you're now playing 16 games, which is equivalent to an NFL regular season. And that's a big toll to be putting on a 19 or a 20-year-old's body. So... I don't think eight's the answer. Maybe it's something like you say, where you play one game early, even before conference championship game season. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
the weird around thing. Conference championship game season.
Yeah, because the weird thing is you can get rid of conference championship games, and in turn to get that game to be set up as a weekend of the first weekend of the playoff. However. Then you're going off of, okay, you look at a conference like the Big Ten where it's the East and the West, and it's like, and we're going to just say Ohio State wins because they're undefeated, or they're undefeated in conference play, but they also didn't play the other team across the way that's undefeated in conference play. And so then, or like they're both 8-1 in the Big Ten. So like who wins the regular season if they didn't play each other? And that creates its own confusion. So it's just like, it's a weird – You can see why they've kept it at four. You can see why they haven't expanded, because we're literally saying out loud what the obstacles are, right? And so I think the defining moment in the college football playoff and, like, how they're going to make this, like, scenario work was the 2014 season when you had both TCU and Baylor vying for a spot in the Final Four or the playoff. And instead of putting one of those two in where they was, like, cutting teeth because Baylor had beaten TCU early in the year, but then TCU had lost early in the year, but then they beat Baylor at the end of the year, and now it's this whole jumble. They're like, you know what? We'll just take Ohio State, plop them over those two, and then we don't have to make the debate. We can just like say, well, neither of them made it. We couldn't decide. But that's also kind of a cheap way to get out of it. But that's they've rode that wave the whole way.
As of right now, I think four is still fine. It's
fine as long as there's – it's not even equal representation. It's fair representation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's – by no means am I saying that, like, you can't have two SEC teams in it. But, like, you can't have two SEC teams in it. It's like, well, they only lost to Alabama. It's like, yeah, okay, but they – like, that's at the end of the year. That should count more as a loss. I don't know. That's where I'm at with it.
I just want to play devil's advocate for a second because there's no perfect system. There's no way that this is going to be perfect.
You could just say, like, at the end of the year, we played 13 games, and I guess they're the best. So,
and the problem with expanding is it becomes so much of an all-or-nothing thing for a team season, where if you're a team who's a top 15, top 10 team, it's not enough just to go win a conference championship game. You got to go make the college football playoff, and you got to go win the college football playoff, whereas college football for years has been about, okay, a mid-major team can go get 7 wins, win a bowl game, and that season's a success.
Mm-hmm.
Or a team who's usually a middling Power 5 team can go and win 8 games, 9 games, make a push for the West Conference of their division, conference, for example. And that season could be a success, even if they go lose in a bowl game or win in a bowl game. Because you get that bowl trip, and then you reach a college football playoff expanding where now it's just, all right, if you're a top 25 team, you're shooting for college football playoff or nothing.
Yeah.
And anything less than that is a failure, which I don't like. With a 14 playoff, you still have the success of the other New Year's Six bowls.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's funny that, you know, we let our minds race to Nebraska playing in the college football playoff so early. It's funny because, like, you'd think, well, shouldn't you be happy with winning the West first? Or shouldn't you be happy even, like, having a chance to compete in the West or having a chance to play in Indy? And it's like, people have gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, that's nice, but, like, unless that's helping us get to the playoff, it only matters a little bit. Like, if you lose week 5, if you're a team, not Nebraska, but if you're a team like Indiana, Illinois, maybe even like a Minnesota, you lose like week 3 to week 5, you're almost mailing it in. And it's not fair to those programs that, you know, will never have a shot. So I think that's just the interesting take. More Hail Varsity as we continue, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Rolling on a Tuesday on Hail Varsity Radio, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. Find us, follow us on Twitter, tweet at us at @2birds1stone, at Herbal Essences. And follow at Hail Varsity for all your Nebraska news and updates as fall camp is getting ready to kick off this week. Fan day on Thursday. Like I said earlier, hopefully no one brings anything crazy to sign. Like, just keep it to shirts and pictures, maybe. Like, just don't go farther than that.
If you're out there listening and you think whatever you're going to bring is going to be funny and everyone's going to laugh,
it's
and
not.
It's mm-mm.
Here's my thing. Actually, I think it was, I think I saw a guy get his old prosthetic leg signed. I think that's what happened. Which, that's funny. That's good. So I guess if that's a scenario that you have, sure, that one works. But, like, if you're at home and you're thinking, like, would this be weird to have an 18 to 22-year-old sign or have Mario Verduzco sign? That might be the guy that you can bring something weird to.
Take a cigar to Mario Verduzco and have him sign. Like, actually, like, wait, tobacco-free like campus. No, don't take your cigar.
Which is funny. Like, I was at Fan Day last year, and the dude had a cigar in his mouth the whole time. I like how there's an exception. I was like, maybe if you're on the payroll, it doesn't matter.
No, Nebraska's a tobacco-free campus, unless you're the coach of Adrian Martinez, in which case you're free to go.
Hey, man. That's right. Whatever. But, yes, if you think for some reason, like, man, would this be funny or interesting? Should I bring this? Like, if you have to think about it, don't, you know? Like, should I have my arm signed so I can go get a tattoo of it later? Probably not.
Remember, these are 18 to 22-year-olds, and then think back to yourself 18 to 22, and think, would I have wanted to deal with this? And if the answer
put yourself in the shoes of any of those guys. I'm like, man, would I want to sign this guy's forehead? No, probably not.
Yeah, no.
So let's keep it clean this year. Keep it PG. Bring like a shirt, a football. you know, maybe wear the shirt, a flag, something.
Some normal things?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Normal things that people sign.
Yeah.
Let's just, we'll put it that way. Maybe a bobblehead. Maybe.
That'd be cool.
Know. Yeah. I don't know. That's my thought on that. Anyways, NBA. What got me sparked on this, and it took a couple of minutes here, but what got me sparked on this was Stephen A. talking about LeBron. I believe it was today, maybe it was yesterday, about the combination of him and Davis out in L.A. and what that could look like, and maybe the motivation that LeBron will have coming back, since he hasn't played basketball since April, didn't play in the playoffs, didn't play in the finals, first time in 9 years. And it kind of got my mind racing a little bit. Like, I think they could be good, but I just look at some of the other duos and some of the other, like, situations that teams have. I mean, even staying in the same city with L.A., you look at Kawhi, Pat Bev, you've got Lou, you've got
PG,
Paul George. Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, that's just, like, four big names. Like, they still have great role players.
Mm-hmm.
And I just look at, I mean, you look at LA and like they've got role players too, and they've got Boogie and they've got Kuzma, and then you've got LeBron and Anthony Davis. But also, like, Kuzma's probably going to come off the bench, like, in theory. I mean, he could start, I guess, but then you're going to have at least three forwards out on the court at the same time. I know they've already announced that LeBron's going to play point guard, but that doesn't change the fact that he's 6'9". So I question that, whether he can come back and have like this phenomenal season that people think he's capable of.
The Lakers are built for the playoffs. When you look at that team, that's a team that's going to struggle to get a top seed in the West. They're going to be a 5, a 6, a 7 seed in the West. I don't see them being ahead of the Jazz. I think the Jazz got a lot better this offseason.
Yeah.
I think the Nuggets have a great young core they're building on. I think they're going to be a top 4 seed. The Clippers have one of the premier starting 5 defensive units in the league. I think they're going to be tough to beat during the regular season. And then even the Rockets. James Harden's a consistent scorer. They added Russell Westbrook. I think it's going to take them some time to mesh, but I think by the time they get to the end of the season, that's going to be a juggernaut of a regular season team. Mm-hmm. I think the Rockets are going to flounder a little bit in the playoffs. Typical. It's hard to have two superstars with egos that mesh like that, especially whenever you're playing a team in a 7-game series.
And you play the exact style. The reason Paul and Harden worked out, Chris Paul, the reason they worked well is because you had a guy that was a true point guard in Chris Paul, who knew he'd get his, but also knew that, like, one of the two is younger and one of the two is going to probably score more and be a more prolific scorer. So he was able to defer to James Harden. I think it'll be a really interesting, like, combination of those two, because they've played together. It's not like they haven't. It's not like they are, like, it's a foreign concept for Harden and Westbrook to play together. But they haven't played together in this, like, aspect of the game, and they haven't played in this, like, this style where, you know, one of you is probably going to have to not have the ball as much, and I wonder how that's going
to
work.
I think it's just going to start out, the team's going to be slow to start. They're going to be coming out the gate slow. Does anyone remember the Heat, their first year with the Big 3?
I remember. Yeah.
And they start out so slow, and everyone's like, oh, what was all this hype about? And then about 2 weeks into the season, they went, never mind, we got it figured out.
Yeah, and I being a Heat fan, like, when that situation happened, I think it was easier as a non-Heat fan to look at that and go, like, oh, what, see, now they were all talking themselves up. And, like, as a Heat fan, you look at it and go, okay, but you add a new guy to a team, depending on who it is, and it changes the dynamic. Like, and now you're adding two new guys, plus D-Wade was already there, plus all the guys that are role players. So it's just like, you've got to give it, like, some time to mesh. And I don't know what that means for the Rockets. I don't know if that means Westbrook is taking less shots. I don't even know if it's so much he's got to take less shots. He's just got to be more efficient. Like, we know what he's good at, and he just chooses to shoot threes anyways. Mm-hmm. And I said this to Schmidt one time. I think it's not even a scenario where he's got this big ego that I have to have the ball, I have to shoot. I think he got to the point where it's like he is this, like, athletically gifted player that put so much on himself that, like, if he didn't get it done,
then no matter what, it was his fault.
I think when it's all said and done, this next NBA season as a whole is going to be one of the most competitive seasons we've had since probably the formation of the Big Three. And I'd even argue back into some of the
probably
mid-2000s.
Even farther than that. Yeah.
Probably past the Kobe teams.
Yeah, and even then, like, you kind of had the dominance of the Lakers in the early 2000s.
I think just about any of the top seven seeds in the West can make it out and make it to the NBA Finals. You got the Portland Trailblazers, who are bringing back Yusuf Nurkic along with Lillard and McCollum. Yep. They're going to be good again. The Clippers, we talked about. The Lakers, we talked about. Nuggets got a good young core. The Rockets got Russell Westbrook, another superstar. The Utah Jazz went and got Donovan Mitchell. They had Donovan Mitchell, and they went and got Mike Conley. Yep. They went and got Bojan Bogdanovic. They got better. There's a lot of teams in that West that can vie for the number one spot and can vie for the NBA Finals.
And we're not even talking about the fact that if Zion pops off in his first year, that the Pelicans will be a threat. Maybe not to make the playoffs, but to potentially just wreak havoc in the West and maybe throw other teams off the straight and narrow. So
I think the East can be just as unpredictable.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Celtics got better when they cut Kyrie.
Mm-hmm. Well, they got Kemba instead.
Yeah, Kemba, who I think is a better player for that system than Kyrie.
Yeah.
The Nets are going to be good now that they have Kyrie, and then they're going to get Kevin Durant next year. The Milwaukee Bucks are going to be good again. Don't sleep on the Raptors. They're going to be good. It's going to be a wild NBA season.
Yeah, I think for the first time in either of our lifetimes, we will get truly competitive basketball from both conferences.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Tuesday, Colton Stone alongside Elijah Herbel. Find us, follow us on Twitter, tweet at us, DM us at TwoBirds1Stone, at Herbal Essences, and always follow at Hail Varsity. Follow Chris Schmidt at Schmidt_Radio. Schmidt will be back Thursday, so tomorrow will be Will and I. Big thanks to the Athletics, Mitch Sherman, for joining us. Quickly, some NFL news and updates. I believe you had an update on Divino Zigbo, his time down in New Orleans, obviously an undrafted free agent, signing with the Saints.
The Saints Wire, it's a Saints little publication.
Mm-hmm.
They ranked Divino Zigbo as their most likely undrafted free agent to make the roster this upcoming year. I saw some highlights on Twitter too of Divine making some pretty crisp cuts. He looked fast, he looked cut, he looked ready to go at Saints training camp. Sounds like he impressed his first weekend there. And I don't know, he's one to watch through some preseason games, see what kind of touches he gets and if he can impress in actual game time moments, because that might be what decides between him making the roster and missing the roster.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's one of those that you know what he was capable of in college, and kind of not even a late bloomer, like on his own accord. It was kind of a held under wraps until it was like, oh yeah, we've got a great running back in Ozigbo now we can play him. And it's like, I think he probably gets drafted if he gets more playing time in his 4 years here. So it's one of those that we went through so many different like offensive changes that he never really got a chance to stick. And then all of a sudden it's like, where's this guy coming from? And then 1,000 yards his senior year.
Another Husker to watch as we make it through training camp. Luke Gifford impressed early through mini camp. Read some articles about him saying he is
Dallas, right?
Yeah. He's got a good shot to make the team. They got some thin linebacker depth. But I read another article today saying that Sean Lee has been working a lot on special teams and has been taking away reps from guys like Gifford and some of the young backers. So it's a little worrisome, but it's going to be exciting to see how he performs through preseason. He's an explosive guy, going to be moving back away from the line of scrimmage now with the Cowboys. Interesting to see what he'll do. He's a guy who was a safety in high school, moved up to outside backer, and then almost a DN type in college. Now he's going to be moving back 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage to a traditional linebacker. So,
yeah, and with Sean Lee, too, I think someone tweeted, it was like, Sean Lee being banged up in training camp is a sign that football season has officially started. He, like, twisted a knee or ankle or something, and it's nothing. They don't think it's anything serious, but I mean, if he's out for 3 or 4 days, it gives reps to guys like Gifford.
And yeah, that's what the article was talking about. Like, why is Sean Lee working special teams?
Yeah.
Whenever he's an established veteran in the league, but you gotta do what you gotta do. Try to make
maybe
a roster.
Phase him out. I don't know. Who knows?
Colton, really fast. What you got on deck tomorrow?
Well, the plan right now is I think we'll get a golf segment with Shuey tomorrow.
I think we will have Derek Peterson tomorrow hit on a couple of his stories from this week. I believe we will get in touch with Mike Babcock. We'll see as football gets rolling, and we'll talk to him about that. And if time permits, I will reach out to Greg Smith and get a recruiting hit and talk to him about a couple of his stories this week, too. All right, so 30 seconds, just really quick. What I thought was funny today, Gruden saying that Nathan Peterman is growing on him. I think this is a way to maybe get Derek Carr to either play harder or Gruden just stirring up controversy as Hard Knocks gets rolling. But a fact from Peterman, he is 451st of 451 quarterbacks in the era modified adjusted yards per attempt, with the minimum of 100 dropbacks. For Elijah Herbal, I'm Colton Stone. This has been Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.